From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm Evan Dawson.
And I'm Megan Mack. Lots to discuss this week, starting with the City of Rochester's new climate action plan. You might expect that it has environmental activists cheering.
It's not exactly the case. Not really. Don't get us wrong. The Rochester People's Climate Coalition is glad to see the city adopting an action plan. And the plan's goal, by the way, among other things, is to reduce local emissions by 80% by the year 2050. But if you ask activists whether they think the city considered their ideas, the conversation changes.
We sat down with Abby McHugh Griffa and Sue Hugh Smith, along with the City of Rochester's Commissioner of Environmental Services, Norman Jones. First, you'll hear Abby describing some of her frustrations.
From what I understand, between when the draft was released and when the final document was released, there were some minor edits that were made, but no real substantive changes, which does, on some level, lead me to question the value of that public input process. But, you know, when you asked earlier, you know, is Rochester heading in the right direction? And I would say, yes, absolutely. Rochester's head in the right direction has further to go, as do many, many, many cities around the country. But we are very glad that the progress that has been made is being made and certain that we're going to continue moving in that direction.
Let me just ask you then directly, after the draft was released, then you get public comments, how many of your suggestions were adopted?
I think zero. But that's why, as we say, it's an aspirational document, and we aspire higher, honestly. We aspire to go above and beyond what is in there.
What's an example of one of the mm-hmm. suggestions you had that would have topped your list that you would have liked to see them adopt that they did not?
Well, so specifically, they've proposed in the Climate Action Plan a voluntary benchmarking program for commercial buildings. This is another example of where, you know, other cities have implemented, you know, definitely specifically New York City, a mandatory benchmarking program, just meaning that at the time of sale, it's required that an energy audit be done and it be clear to the buyer what they're buying, so that then properties of similar size can be compared and the buyer can make the best decision.
You know, this would be helpful for renters as well, because, you know, we get into situations where, unfortunately, people rent a space they think's affordable, then their heating and energy costs skyrocket, and they're faced with either paying the rent or paying the utilities, and then they end up having to leave that property. So it creates instability. So having a metrics that is uniform would be helpful for tenants. It could serve as an incentive for the property owners to upgrade because there would be knowledge that people would have to choose from different properties.
And that was one of our specific suggestions at the time when the draft of the cap was out, that it be, rather than a voluntary program, let's make it a mandatory program and probably phased in over a number of years so people could make those adjustments. And again, don't get me wrong, we are 100% aware of and supportive of everything the city has already done, especially, you know, their own municipal operations. They've done enormously good work just to make better choices, sustainable choices internally. I think going the next step to require that others do the same.
Add teeth, as you say.
Add teeth, yes, okay. Adding teeth. So that would be one example.
All right, so let me ask Norman to respond to that. Why not add teeth in the way that they described, in the way they say other cities such as New York City have on this issue?
Well, let's compare oranges to oranges, mm-hmm. apples to apples. Don't compare Rochester to the Big Apple. I mean, it's not.
They're both cities.
It's not a true comparison, Evan. It's New York City is over 8 million. They have a tax base that's huge, and their opportunities. We're 209,000. The comparisons, they're different. However, there's, to Abby's concern, there is something called the New York State Building Code that has certain conditions that are in place that meet the energy code standards. And if we're going to do anything along those lines, we have to first be part of that building code system and structure. So for us to, we can't supersede a New York State law that's already in place in regards to standards that are in place. So that's why we put it in there as voluntary. When people do this on a voluntary basis, you have better compliance. If we make it statutory and we say, guess what, you need to do this or we're going to penalize you, we'll spend more time doing the actual enforcement part than the actual education.
Next, we hear from comedian Mike Birbiglia. For many, he needs no introduction. I think he's among the best comics and storytellers of this generation. Maybe you know him from his pieces on This American Life or his films Sleepwalk With Me and Don't Think Twice. And maybe you've heard about his sleep disorder. Am I really supposed to talk about
mine? Yeah, I've written that he should ad-lib in the script about his own sleep disorder. So go ahead, Evan, tell the listeners.
Mike Birbiglia and I both have REM behavior disorder, which just means occasionally when we sleep, our brains and bodies don't do what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to disconnect. So you dream, but your body doesn't do what the dream does. Sometimes that doesn't work.
So Mike Birbiglia jumped out a window once. What's the craziest thing that ever happened to you?
I dove headfirst down a full flight of stairs and landed at the bottom. That did wake me up. The next night, I got out the front door and in a dead sprint went 3 blocks around the corner and woke up when my feet started bleeding. So I've had some interesting times. The point is, I can relate to comedian Mike Birbiglia, and he was in Rochester.
He was for performances at Comedy at the Carlson, which, if you haven't heard, is a new club near Blossom Road. And we talked to Mike about his show, The Art of Comedy, and more. In this clip, he talks about how you can be kind in comedy, even in a heavily charged political environment. And what I really enjoyed hearing about was his thoughts about truth in comedy.
I don't really talk much about politics in this show. It's a very personal show, and I would say I allude to the present world situation a few times. In some ways, we're living in times where by not talking about politics, you are talking about politics because it's so, we're so immersed in it all the time with the 24-hour news cycle that we're surrounded by in every airport and restaurant and bar. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like everything has been said about this presidency. My favorite line that I've seen tweeted was the comedian Bo Burnham, who people should check out if they're not familiar with him. He wrote, "If you don't want me to tweet about politics, then don't elect a joke."
Oh, that's good. I'm not endorsing, as the host of this program, I'm not endorsing the content. I'm just saying that's a clever clever construction.
It's a nice, clever use of words.
That's
it
right.
It really is.
Yeah, well.
But it is, it's an odd time for comedy because it's just such an unprecedented period. And also there's this question of what's true and what's fake. And actually jokes depend on truth. They depend on truth is the setup for punchlines. And if there is no truth, then what is the punchline?
Next up, we recite the Declaration of Independence. Well, not really, but that's what NPR does every 4th of July. And this year, they tweeted the entire document, too. Well, some people on Twitter didn't know what the lines referred to, and they lashed out, saying it was offensive, anti-Trump screed. That prompted us to think about how the Declaration of Independence is taught in schools, if it even is.
I'm trying to think here. When I learned about the Declaration of Independence, I probably memorized the preamble. Did you memorize the preamble?
We had to do that. We did a lot of memorization, and that's my criticism of
too much
my
just rote memorization.
Just for tests. We never talked about the impact. Yeah. I regret that.
Yeah, I think that's right. And studies show that immigrants fare better than American citizens on naturalization tests, with 1 in 3 Americans failing that test. In this clip, you'll hear Samuel Bovard, a 7th and 8th grade teacher in the Rochester City School District. He works with refugee students. But first, here's Evie Fanning, a high school English teacher who took the test herself about 20 years ago. She talks about the value of understanding the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and American history.
I think that the Constitution is a document that lays the foundation for people's rights in a good way. I think that knowing the Constitution and knowing the Bill of Rights makes us aware of the things, I don't want to use the word entitled, but like the things that we can count on, the things that we can rely on as citizens, as people who live in this country. And so upholding those, I think, I'm not burdened by that. I appreciate that. I'm glad that I have a responsibility to do that. I mean, I think my point was that these days upholding it and defending it looks like protesting, and that's unfortunate. But I do feel that I have a responsibility to do that as somebody who knows this document and knows the ideals that it was founded on. Now, the history, I think, is a very different thing. And certainly we have, in many ways, a shameful history. You know, we can talk about slavery. I just discovered the Evian Conference, like, a month ago. Why didn't I ever learn about that before, right? Like, why aren't we studying all of the times in history when we have broken those ideals, when we have acted contrary to what the Constitution tells us to do. Ultimately, I think in the history of this country, we revisit those and we try to make reparations for them. We pass laws about asylum, about refugees. But we need to know those things, you know, because things keep coming up, whether because of people's ignorance, which has become like strangely acceptable and almost profitable today, I think, about the history and the laws. We have to know these things because as they come up, you know, if suddenly green card holders are being treated like foreigners, I'm outraged by that, but I'm not scared by it because I know that green card holders are entitled to the protection of every law that citizens are entitled to. And so as long as I live in the United States, where the supreme law is the Constitution and not in Trumplandia, I'm not really scared that that kind of thing is going to be a go.
Hmm. Sam, you want to weigh in before we get back to the phone calls? Go ahead.
About what?
There's a lot to chew on there. For your students, are you concerned about anybody who would say, well, if you teach the reality that that's somehow anti-American, I always say, save it.
Right.
I love this country because of the ideals that we have probably never achieved.
Right.
But I would hope to, in my son or his son's lifetime, maybe we get there eventually. That's not anti-American.
No, it's not. And it's difficult. Like I said, like a lot of my students are not born in America. So it's extremely difficult to kind of apply the sensibilities that founded this nation to their sensibilities coming over. But I think it's still extremely important and vital for you know, citizens, even if they're not citizens yet, to know what they're facing and, mm-hmm. to know what's, you know, the ideals of this nation and what it can provide for them.
Let's end the week with the story of a photographer who is blind. Mohammed Saad is a disability rights activist from Saudi Arabia. He lost his sight just a few days into his life due to a medical mistake. Over the years, he has developed a strong following on social media where he teaches other people who are blind how to use technology, take photos, even cook.
Saad travels the world telling his story, but he says he wasn't always as outgoing as he is now. When he was younger, he was homeschooled and he didn't leave the house often because his parents wanted to protect him. He says, like many people, they didn't understand how to interact with people who are blind. In this clip, he talks about the day that all changed.
It started, I guess, in 2000-something, 2006 maybe. And I was in my father's shop. My daddy, he has like a shop for electronic devices, for home devices. Mm-hmm. And I still remember that customer just who came and asked me about one of our materials or one of our devices. And he said, how much is it? I'm totally blind. So I asked him, can you just give me the thing that you are holding it on your hands just to tell you the price? Because I need to touch it. I don't know what is it exactly. And then he replied, so if you are totally blind and you can't help others, why are you here? And he just left it at that and go out. That time, maybe I should cry that time as an adult, but I was thinking that he's correct. This is not my place. So I have to study like everyone else. I have to make my dreams come true. So I decided to change this life. And I came back at home and refused to do anything, refused to eat and to drink. And then my daddy just came and asked me, what's the matter with you? I said, I want to study. As simple as that. He said, but you're blind. Then I replied, but even blinds can study. Even blind people can study. He said, okay, if that's what you want, it's okay. You can do this. Then I start study. I was very happy, but I was thinking about the other families and other blinds on my country. So I decided to join Twitter, to join the social networks in general before Twitter, and to try to change the ideas that everyone think about blinds or people with disability, with visual impairments. So delivering my message that blind people can live their life normally, they can do everything they want, even if it's related to sight. So this is the start, as I remember.
Wow. And you said your father, he said, okay, what did the rest of your family say about your desire to do these things?
All my family is from the beginning, they're accepted, but the problem was with my father.
Hmm.
Yeah. But now he's very proud of me And I'm still giving this example before. Only, I think, 11 years ago, I was not able even to go to our neighbor beside me, beside our house. And now when they ask my father about me, he replied, I don't know, maybe he's in Lebanon or in Dubai, and you could give him a call and ask him. Yeah, and I'm very happy. And again, I'd like to say that he loves me very much. But the problem, all families, or most of the families, at least in my country, they don't know how to interact with the blind.
And that does it for this edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can hear Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio, 89.5 FM.
We're also on the WXXI mobile app. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you Monday.